Thanks to the organisers for inviting me to talk about this, and thank you for coming to this talk. So the outline of my talk, I'm going to break it up into three parts. So first, I think a lot of us know about the constraints of our current HIV testing models, so I'll just fly through that quite quickly. I want to spend a lot of time talking about some pretty exciting testing models that I've seen around the world, and hopefully, potentially, we could implement here in Australia. And also finally end off with how do we actually work out what do Australians actually want. So before I sort of dig into my talk, and I'm not going to talk about any of these, but I just want to acknowledge that these are equally important to think about as we set up HIV testing services, that we need to carefully think about our support and referral pathways for those who are testing negative so that they can be linked to things like PrEP, and for those who are positive or linkage into care. STIs are incredibly important as well, so think about that, and just this whole thing about normalizing the culture of HIV testing. So we all know that HIV testing is critical, and I'm probably preaching to the choir here, that in order to get virtual elimination, we do need early diagnosis and treatment. We know that we are not doing that great in Australia, where we still have 11% undiagnosed. And this, for some reason, this has not budged in the last 10 years. So there's a core group of people that are not being diagnosed, and 36% of them are diagnosed late. And we know from some sort of modelling work from Richard Gray at the Kirby Institute that this 11% core group contribute to 50% of our new infections in Australia. So it's really important to reach them. We know that MSM, specifically in Australia, are doing quite well. So this is from the Gay Community Periodic Survey. There is some variation across the nation, but in general, most men are being tested within the last 12 months. But we must not forget there is this proportion. This is the heterosexual new diagnosis, about 25% currently, and will continue to increase as the MSM diagnosis decreases. So do not forget them. And also, there are other groups that we must not forget as well. I know this has been reiterated a few times in a conference, but hopefully with repetition, it's sort of ingrained in us to think about this. So also thinking about overseas-born MSM, thinking about the First Nations people, thinking about travellers, particularly from Perth. I heard from Byron's work here that it's a group of concern, and young people as well. So the challenge, if the group here wants to take it up, is how do we reach this 11% that's been so resistant to testing? And how do we continue to test those who are at risk for HIV? This is quite an encouraging slide. Many of you have seen it many times, where because of treatment as prevention and PrEP for Australian-born MSM, we see this sharp decline of a new HIV diagnosis. But at the bottom, as you can see, that there are the groups that are not being impacted. So we need to do better to try to think about how do we get them to also have a decline. And we know what works. So we know treatment as prevention works. We know PrEP works. We know PEP works. But we also know that we need testing more frequently and in a smarter way. So don't forget, I mean, all the top three are really sexy sort of things to think about. But just that basic foundation of frequent testing, we need that, and particularly to reach this hidden population, 11%. So the traditional testing model is like this. If someone wants to be tested, they attend a clinic, they talk to a health professional about their sexual health, they get a venipuncture, and within 3 to 7 days, they will get their result. And we know that with using this testing service, there are barriers at the individual level, fear of stigma and discrimination. And we also know that a big driver is that just inaccurate perception of risk. If you don't think you're at risk, you won't turn up for testing. There's still, unfortunately, embarrassment to talk to health professionals about that. There are also key structural issues that we need to think about, testing location, cost, and just inconvenience to the person. But there is, a silver lining that's coming, and many of you know about the new technologies that enable us to decentralize HIV testing now. And Ben's spoken about the point of care testing and also the dry blood spot technologies. I'm not going to focus most of my talk on the point of care testing, But essentially, we want to be able to use these technologies to get the tests to the communities. So rather than waiting for them to come into our doors, we want to get the kits to them. There are lots of pros for rapid point-of-care testing. So you get a result within 20 minutes. You're no longer restricted to be in a clinic, but you can test at home and various locations. There is no need for a laboratory to be attached to the test. And you can actually train lay providers and testers themselves to use this technology. And there is a lot of research now to show that this technology is acceptable. People find it's more comfortable, it's convenient, and less stressful as well. And it can increase testing, particularly among first-time testers and those who are testing infrequently. So it's almost indisputable now that that these are all the advantages. There are some cons to think about. So the longer window period means that it might take a while before someone gets an accurate diagnosis. I know that particularly in Asia, there's concerns about point-of-sex testing as well, so we need to be cognizant of that. I didn't put it down there, but the verification aspect as well is quite important. I've got a poster at the conference, so if people have seen it, and that kind of systematic review about verification of HIV self-testing will be published in JADES in the next couple of months. So I just want to spend some time talking about some cool ideas that I've seen around about how do we actually distribute these kits? How do we get this kit to the people? This is by no means exhaustive, but just some of the things that I've seen. Many in the room will know that peer-led services are really key to get this technology into the hands of people that need it. And there's been many successful community-based testing programs. And when I was working at Dean Street, many of you may recognize that the Dean Street Express model has been really a flagship of getting this to the people. And we also have similar models in Australia. So the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, the Test and Go, Pronto in Victoria as well, and Oxford Street in New South Wales. And this is quite a nice article. This is from Queensland, and they also do rapid community-based testing, and they have sort of scaled that up into a lot of communities now, which is fantastic to see. We also know that these technologies, because you don't need a lab, you can bring it out to where the people are, at awareness events, football matches, roadshows, saunas, and so on. And again, there's a large body of evidence that is accumulating to show that this is a very effective way to reach people that would not walk through your doors. Some of the work that I've been involved in Africa is about training actually community-based distributors. So these people will actually go into rural villages and knock on people's doors and talk to them about HIV testing and actually test people. And we found that, as a health economist, we've done the sort of costing kind of work, and we found that in terms of cost, it's the equivalent of a conventional sort of testing model. The internet has really revolutionized how we can distribute these test kits. I want to talk about this model that some of you may not have heard about, but it's starting to be scaled up in Asia, and you can read about it in this journal article here. But essentially, it's a model where if someone wants to be tested, they pay a $5 deposit. So they go onto a website, and the kits get delivered to their house. This is all organized through the community. And as long as they take a photo of their self-test kit result, the $5 is immediately refunded back to them. So this is essentially a free way of getting the kits to them, but also helps with verification. So we've had up to 100%. Of kits coming back. So that's a way to get that kind of information. And then if there is a reactive test, because this is run through the communities, a peer navigator can help them. So I found out that was quite a cool way to do it. This is a sneak peek. So I'm working on a paper at the moment just to show that within China, we have a two-year sort of trial, and we have shown that this model is actually cost-saving compared to sort of rapid testing from facilities. So this is a very nice way to get the technology to people. This one, when I bring it up, some people are sort of saying that, oh, wow, this is a really cool idea. Others might think this is quite scary. It's like 1984 type thing. But basically what this is you send people the kits, but you download an app onto your phone. And with Bluetooth technology, your phone actually picks up the time that you open up the kits. So it can tell that once someone opens up the kit, it sends a signal to some central body, and within 24 hours, that you would get a counsellor calling up and then sort of asking, how did you go with the test kit? Do you need some support? That sort of thing. So this kind of technology is available, and this was done in the US. So this is to reach MSM sort of communities. It's not scaled up, but it's under sort of trial, and you might see more of this kind of things, sort of clever uses of technology. I'm not going to talk a lot about secondary distribution. The WHO already has quite a nice article about how you can use these people who have tested and then give them some 4 or 5 extra kits, and then they distribute it out amongst their sort of networks, and it's been shown to be quite effective as well. I want to just briefly talk about how to increase access to these kits. Some of you may have heard in Brighton, in the UK, the world first digital vending machine, where essentially you get a free HIV self-testing kit at the point where people might be at risk for HIV. And that's been quite successful as well. It's won some awards, and it's currently under evaluation. But from the preliminary data that I've seen, it's actually looking very good. At the bottom there is actually in China, in Beijing. So it's in a vending machine, so you could go up to this vending machine, buy a packet of chips, and also get a HIV test as well, if you like. So just getting, because university students in China are a high-risk group, so we're just thinking of how to get these kids to them. There's a lot of talk about pharmacies, and I just want to put a cautionary note on this one. There's lots of pilot studies, and it's very context-specific. So I know that some work that I've done in Nigeria has shown that people actually hate it. They do not want to get kits from pharmacies, whereas in other countries like South Africa, Thailand, and UK and US, they've actually shown that this could be an acceptable model. So I guess the question is, does your context, do the people actually want it from the pharmacy? So you have to think about that. So I want to end off by just asking this question: how do we actually work out what people actually want? I mean, there's so many sort of cool ideas, different ways of distributing these kits. So we all know that one size fits all will not work, because everyone is sort of have different preferences. I would love to implement all the cool ideas that I've seen and just dump it all, and hopefully people will test. But we also know the reality of this is that we do have finite resources, so we need to spend our money well. We also live in an era of precision medicine, where we are increasingly asked to provide the right program to the right individuals just to maximize the effectiveness. So getting the biggest bang for the buck. So what can we do? So we can learn from the economists and the marketers. So we can use methods that they've been using for decades, where they kind of try to, the buzz term is market segmentations. And we're trying to work out who is out there in the population, what do they actually want. So I attempted this. We used a method called a discrete choice experiment. Some of you may have seen this data. Again, it's hopefully coming out soon as a publication. So the point is not to give you all the details of the study, but to show that it is possible to do it. So this was a study done with collaboration with Grindr. So we recruited 1,606 Australian gay bisexual men in the last 2 years. And essentially, we asked them, product A is this, product B is that, which one would you prefer? And you get 10 of these series with varying sort of levels. And with that, we try to understand what are the preferences, what do people value the most. And just to show you that there are ways to segment the market. So this is about messaging. So thinking about, if you look at the very top, it's about if you want to message about accuracy, then these are the groups of people that actually kind of value that. The cheaper tests are these, the recent migrants, frequently partner change. So the other thing we can do is what we call latent class analysis, which means that we can kind of predict what are the factors that influence someone to test using a self-testing kit. We found that about half of the people, they don't really care where they're getting it from, but they care largely about the price. Interestingly, we found that the rest of the people actually were quite driven by the location of the kits itself. And you can see at the bottom here, I love the healthcare staff around here, but very little people would prefer to buy it from the self-testing kit. Interestingly, in Australia, the retail pharmacy and online are good options. And also 14%, they wanted things like vending machines, which we don't currently have. So we need to think about, can we reach these people, these 14%? There are a lot more questions. I think we can apply those kind of methods to the non-MSM groups and work out what they would like. I think we need to think better about our current sexual health services and how we need to redesign some of this potentially, but really stressing the fact that we need local preference data. So it's great to see what's happening out there, but I think we need to work out what does your community need and then adapt it for that. So my take-home message is that we already have the means and motivation to eliminate HIV. I think that's a real reality, but we need to think about smarter testing models. And sorry, just a plug again, nothing to do with HIV testing, but there is a free open access issue on gonorrhea that's been sponsored by the World Health Organization. So you could access that if you want. And thank you very much for your time.